Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, curious listeners, to another deep dive. Today, we're taking a really fascinating journey. We're going back, way back to the late 18th century.
Yeah, exploring a text that's, well, foundational isn't quite the word, but close. It really shaped early American identity.
Exactly. And it keeps asking these big questions that still feel incredibly relevant. We're talking about Letters from an American Farmer by Jean de Crèvecoeur.
And it's amazing how much it resonates, isn't it? Written, what, over 200 years ago? But his thoughts on identity, nation building, the contradictions.
Definitely the contradictions.
You really see echoes of them today. It feels surprisingly fresh.
Absolutely. So, fair warning, this deep dive is going to be a bit of an intellectual, maybe even emotional roller coaster. We start with this incredibly hopeful, almost like picture-perfect vision of America. Land of opportunity, the melting pot idea in its infancy.
Right, the agrarian dream.
Yeah. But then as Crèvecoeur looks closer, things get, well, more complicated, much more sobering. He confronts these huge challenges, these really heartbreaking contradictions.
It's a real journey from idealism to a kind of stark reckoning.
Definitely. Okay, so before we jump into the letters themselves, maybe we should get to know the author a bit. Jean de Crèvecoeur.
Good idea. His full name, quite a mouthful, Michel Guillaume Jean de Crèvecoeur, born in France, Normandy, 1735, had a pretty solid Jesuit education over there.
And then he came across the Atlantic.
He did. First, he served as a surveyor, a map maker, during the French and Indian War.
Right.
Up in French Canada.
Okay.
But what makes him so interesting and why his perspective matters is that he didn't just observe. He became American, or, well, a British colonial subject first.
Right, he naturalized.
Yeah, in New York. Married an American woman, settled down, became a pretty successful farmer for, like, over a decade.
So he really lived it. He wasn't just, you know, writing from afar.
Exactly. He had skin in the game. And that gives him this this dual perspective you mentioned. He's got the immigrant background, the European eyes.
But also the insider knowledge, the right. Day-to-day reality of colonial life.
Precisely. Both insider and outsider. And crucially, he traveled a lot under a pseudonym, J. Hector St. John.
Oh, interesting. Where did he go?
All over the place, really. Yeah. Spent time with Quakers in Pennsylvania, visited the whaling communities on Nantucket, saw the southern plantations, even spent time with Native American groups.
Wow. So he saw the sheer diversity of colonial America firsthand.
He really did. And that mosaic of experiences, that's what feeds into these letters. It's why they feel so grounded, so rich in detail.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So with that background, let's unpack the book itself. Letters from American Farmer. It's not exactly a novel, is it?
No, not at all. It's got this unique structure. It's basically a series of 12 letters, epistolary essays, you could call them.
Written by a fictional farmer.
Yeah, a guy named James. He's presented as this, you know, simple American farmer writing back to an unnamed gentleman in England.
Clever. So it works on a couple of levels.
Totally. On one level, it's like ethnographic reporting for Europeans. Here's what life is really like in this strange new world. Giving them an inside peek.
Like dispatches from the frontier.
Kind of, yeah.
What?
But maybe even more importantly, it helped the early Americans themselves figure out who they were, to articulate their own distinct identity, separate from Europe.
Like holding up a mirror.
Exactly. Helping them see themselves as something new.
And you mentioned this arc. It starts out quite positive.
Oh, very. The early letters paint this incredibly idyllic picture. Rural America as this pastoral paradise. James is living the dream on his farm. Honest work, independence, connection to nature. It's all very virtuous and full of opportunity.
The classic American dream narrative taking shape.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But Crèvecoeur, he's too sharp for just that. The story takes a dramatic turn. James starts confronting the darker sides.
Like what?
Well, the brutality of slavery down south. The violence and, frankly, lawlessness on the frontier. And then the chaos and division of the American Revolution itself.
Right. So that initial optimism, it doesn't last.
It gets severely challenged, shattered, really, leads to this profound sense of disillusionment. It exposes the deep cracks in that perfect vision.
So the book ends up wrestling with some huge questions there.
Absolutely. Questions we're still grappling with, honestly. Like, what actually makes a nation, especially one built by immigrants? How does owning land connect to democracy? Our relationship with nature.
And the big one, how do you square ideals of freedom with, you know, things like slavery? the inherent paradoxes.
Exactly. Those deep, uncomfortable contradictions right at the core.
Okay, let's dive into some specific letters then, because that's where you really see this vision and then the unraveling. You said letters 2 and 3 are the idyllic start.
Yeah, that's James on his Pennsylvania farm. And it's just pure pastoral bliss, almost. He talks about the deep satisfaction of working his own land, the independence, even the sort of moral benefit that he sees coming from it.
He's really connected to the land, the nature around him.
Deeply. He writes beautifully about, you know, the bees, the birds, the rhythm of the seasons. This connection is absolutely central to his identity and happiness at this point.
And this leads him to that big question.
Right. What then is the American, this new man? It's maybe the most famous line from the book.
And his answer is revolutionary for the time, you said.
It really was. He argues the American isn't defined by old European ancestry or class. It's the experience here. It's the freedom, owning land, the democratic sort of principles. That's what transforms people, melts them down, sheds the old prejudices.
Melting pot.
That's the heart of it. Individuals from all nations melted into a new race of men, an identity forged right here in this new environment. It's incredibly optimistic.
Such a powerful idea of reinvention. But then he doesn't just stay on the farm. He takes us somewhere completely different, right? Nantucket.
Exactly. Letters 3 through 8 shift focus dramatically to this Quaker whaling community. And talk about a contrast from the farm, a harsh maritime world.
And this is where he develops that idea about environment shaping people.
Yes, he really pushes it here. He argues the environment basically determines the culture. These Nantucketers always battling the sea, they became, you know, incredibly industrious, communal, brave, very pragmatic.
He gives specific examples.
Oh, yeah. He details their unique customs, like how marriage had to adapt because men were gone whaling for years. So women managed finances, courtships were long and quiet. He even mentions their use of opium.
Really?
Yeah, not recreationally, more like a practical painkiller for the incredibly tough life they led. It all underscores his point. The environment shapes the new man. There isn't just one type.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Okay, so farm life, whaling life, but then comes the big shock. Letter 9X.
Ugh, a Charleston, yes. This is the dramatic turning point. James visits the South, and the contrast is just jarring.
He sees something specific, doesn't he? Something awful.
He does. He describes stumbling upon an enslaved man, left in a cage, basically to die of thirst and insects, as a punishment. It's graphically described, and it's utterly horrifying.
Wow. That must have just destroyed his earlier ideas.
Completely. It forces him and the reader right up against that core contradiction. How can this land of liberty practice such profound, dehumanizing cruelty? It's a moment of intense moral crisis for James. Grefkura doesn't pull any punches here. He exposes the hypocrisy undermining the whole American ideal.
And the book doesn't really recover from that, does it? The final letter deals with the revolution.
Right. Letter 12, Distresses of a Frontier Man. The revolution breaks out, and James's peaceful world is just ripped apart. He's caught in the middle, politically. Doesn't want to choose sides between loyalists and rebels.
Violence just overtakes everything.
It does. He loves peace, loves his farm, but it's all destroyed by the conflict, the political extremism. It highlights the fragility of it all, of civilization, of this American experiment.
And what does he do?
In the end, he despairs. He feels he can't stay. He decides to abandon his farm, leave civilized society altogether, and try to find refuge with a Native American tribe, hoping maybe their way of life is more humane.
That's heartbreaking. A really bleak ending after starting so optimistically.
It is. It really underscores the human cost of this kind of ideological conflict and political chaos. Leaves you wondering about America's future.
Okay, so let's pull back a bit. If we think about the big themes here, what are the key messages that really hit home for us today?
Well, one has to be the melting pot and cultural transformation.
Right.
Grefkura really gave us that language, that metaphor.
And the insight is?
That national identity, especially in a place like America, isn't fixed. It's always being made and remade. It's this dynamic blending. Think about your own community, right? How do different groups, different experiences constantly reshape its character? It's an ongoing process.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Then there's that huge tension, the American dream versus the American nightmare, the slavery contradiction.
Exactly. And the takeaway there is that societies built on high ideals have to reckon with their own inconsistencies. Where do ideals clash with reality? Crèvecœur shows the importance of confronting those uncomfortable truths, not ignoring them. That's crucial for any kind of real progress.
And you mentioned his focus on place environmental determinism.
Mm-hmm. How place shapes us. His argument that the environment, land, sea, economy, strongly influences character and society.
So the reflection for us is?
To just be more aware of how our own surroundings shape us. City, suburbs, rural area. How does where you live subtly affect your values, your routines, even how you see the world? It's often more powerful than we think.
Definitely something to consider. And finally, that ending. The fragility of civilization and political polarization.
Yeah, it's a stark warning, isn't it? How quickly political extremism and conflict can just tear everything apart, destroying individual lives in peace.
So the lesson is about
finding common ground, maybe. Protecting social cohesion, remembering our shared humanity when things get polarized. James's despair is a powerful reminder of what's at stake if we don't.
Wow. Okay. And Crèvecœur had such a way with words, too. You mentioned some memorable lines.
He really did. They capture these big ideas so well. Of course, there's the big one from Letter 3. What, then, is the American, this new man? Here, individuals of all nations are melted into a new race of men whose labors and posterity will one day cause great changes in the world.
That's the defining statement, right? The composite identity, the global destiny, radical hope.
Totally. And he builds on it. The American is a new man who acts upon new principles. He must therefore entertain new ideas and form new opinions.
Underscoring that psychological rebirth. New land, new freedom, new thinking, a total transformation.
Exactly. But then you have the anguish from Letter 9, facing slavery. Oh, nature, where art thou? Are not these blacks thy children as well as we?
Just cuts right through the hypocrisy, a raw moral plea.
It really is. It shows his deep unease, the ethical crisis.
Yeah.
And then from the end, Letter 12, caught in the revolution. I am a lover of peace. What must I do? Must I be defined by a colored piece of cloth or a half-wrought button?
Captures that individual despair perfectly.
Yeah.
Personal values versus abstract loyalties. Peace versus politics.
Such a powerful expression of being caught in the crossfire.
So, thinking about today, how can we actually, like, apply these ideas from way back then?
Well, his thoughts on the melting pot, on integration, they give us a really useful historical lens for understanding cultural integration and national identity now. Immigration, multiculturalism. It reminds us American has always been evolving.
Okay. And the slavery part.
It's a model for recognizing and confronting systemic injustice. His courage in facing that contradiction head on, that pushes us to examine our own society's flaws honestly. To engage critically with social justice, not just accept comfortable stories.
And the political polarization at the end.
A huge cautionary tale for navigating political polarization today. James's tragedy reminds us of the human cost when divides get too deep. It encourages focusing on, you know, shared community, shared humanity, rather than just labels.
Right. And one more thing. His love for the farm.
Ah, yes. A beautiful reminder of the importance of a connection to nature. In our busy, screen-filled lives, his appreciation for the natural world prompts us to maybe seek out that connection ourselves for our own well-being, maybe our own sense of stability.
That's a nice thought. For me personally, I think what struck me most was just the sheer scale of that new man idea at the start, that incredible optimism.
Yeah, the ambition of it.
Exactly. But then the most surprising thing was how starkly that contrasts with the despair at the end. That whole arc from utopia to disillusionment in one man's experience. It really makes you think about how fragile ideals can be.
It really does. And I think maybe the final takeaway is that Letters from an American Farmer shows us American identity isn't some fixed thing you can just define and be done with.
It's more of a process.
Exactly. A continuous, complex, often really difficult process of becoming. Always wrestling with its own promises and its own deep contradictions. Crèvecœur, in a way, calls for a kind of critical patriotism, one that sees the flaws, acknowledges the paradoxes, but does so in order to strive towards making those ideals more real.
A constant work in progress.
You could say that. Always aiming for improvement.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.